coming to you live from the Business Radio X studio. It's Franchise Marketing Radio, brought to you by IDS, an award-winning digital marketing agency that delivers integrated marketing solutions for franchisors, franchisees, and franchise development teams. Learn why over 75 brands depend on IDS's team of dedicated marketers and client service professionals to deliver a strong ROI on their marketing investment. Go to IDSFranchiseMarketing.com for a complimentary digital audit and consultation.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Franchise Marketing Radio, where we delve into the stories of success, innovation, and strategy in the world of franchising. And I'm your host, Rob Ganley. Today, we're exploring the senior care industry from the lens of a seasoned franchisee. Joining us is Cynthia Perthews. She is a multi-unit owner, franchise owner with Senior Care Authority. Cynthia has navigated the complexities of franchising for several years. And today she's going to share her journey, the challenges she's overcome, and her strategies for growth and preparation for a potential exit strategy down the road. So let's dive right in. Cynthia, welcome to the show and thanks for being here. I know we know each other, full disclosure, but it's great to have you here and really talk this way because there's probably some things I didn't know and I can't wait to learn more. But welcome to the show. And could you tell us a little bit about how you came to be a senior care franchisee, how that all started and where you were at the time?
Sure. But first, I want to tell you that, you know, you called me a seasoned franchisee, and that makes me feel really old, Rob. So just so you know, but I'll take that as a compliment. So let me tell you,
it was
where
meant as a compliment.
Okay. Thank you. Let me tell you where I started and how I got here. I started in a variety of other industries in my career. And when I got to be middle age, where most of us get in middle age, my parents began to decline. They were in the state of Texas and I was in the state of New York. I was in Manhattan. I was working on Wall Street. I traveled about 100,000 miles a year for business. I was out of my office for about, 220 days a year. I was someplace outside of New York. And that may sound fun to some of you, but it was really, it took a lot out of me. My parents were getting older and I was getting the phone calls. I was getting the phone calls at night. I was getting the phone calls from hospitals. And eventually I got the phone call from the police that my father was out walking the dog in his pajamas at 3 a.m. one night on the highway. So those things hit you in the face pretty strongly. And when I got through the fire that was my parents and their decline, then my friends who were of the same age as I am, seasoned, they began to call me and say, what'd you do about your mom? What'd you do about your dad? And I realized it was a business. So I went to a broker to try to find something to do. I had no idea about the world of franchising. And the broker really educated me. I had a business coach. He helped me understand the whole model of franchising. And I looked around and did a lot of work, due diligence on it, and really went through some long processes with a number of franchises, not only in the senior care space, but in other spaces, and got to Senior Care Authority.
Yeah. You know, senior care is an interesting industry from a marketing standpoint. That is kind of what I'm thinking right now. Mm-hmm. And I want to zero in a little bit. I just want to capture some of the things you said. I think I feel the same way. Like, I know for me, I'm seasoned. Maybe, yeah, am I seasoned? I don't know. Is that a good word? I probably cared more when I was in my 20s and 30s to be called that, right? So yeah, maybe I'll switch that up. But anyway, I'm seasoned too. But I had that same experience with my dad. Well, he was starting to do things. I didn't have the full experience, but the feeling of being concerned about parents and not knowing what to do, and there being an awareness problem in the U.S., and then on top of that, it being a topic or a subject that just, how do you market that? It's not like something people want to do. It's not, we're aspiring to get our parents into assisted living. And certainly the parents is, that's one of the challenges, right? Is mm-hmm. making them realize maybe it's time or they do need the help. So it's a different kind of service. Can you tell me a little bit about how that affected your marketing strategies and maybe, you know, maybe an example of how you shifted your marketing or how that affected how you approached marketing because of the audience?
Sure. So I want to start by saying that, look, I've been in sales and marketing all my entire career. I have been in sales and marketing. And I always tell the story that my very first job was I was a straight commission salesperson at age 13 because I sold snow cones across the street from the pool. And I did it for the police department. I had a little hut that I sat in and I sold snow cones and I got all the snow cones I could eat. And I think I got about a dime for every snow cone that I sold. Okay. So that was a long time ago, but it was a straight commission sales thing. All of my jobs have been straight commission, not straight, but heavy commission jobs. And I've had my own companies that is really all commission at that point. But what I always did in those positions was I did consultative selling. Maybe I was selling, it was always selling services. It was, I didn't have a widget that I sold. Maybe one time I had a widget that I sold, but most of the time I was selling services. So in a consultative role, I believe that what you're doing is you're building a relationship with your client, if you will, and you're helping them to learn something, whether it's learn something about the service you're selling, learn something about themselves. You want them to learn and you want to be thought of as the expert in the network and in this industry. So the name Senior Care Authority is a really great name for me. And I always tell the story that my mother would tell me, even as a small child, you think you're the authority on everything. And while I wish my mother was still around for a variety of reasons, I really wish she could be around so that she could see that I am not only the authority. I have a card that says I'm the authority. People tell me I'm the authority. I'm the authority in senior care. So I loved the name of it. That's not why I chose it, but why I chose this company. But I love that part because that's what I want people to think about. I want them to think if I need fill in the blank, that has to do with an older individual in my life or in my business, I'm going to call Cynthia or I'm going to call Senior Care Authority. We can talk about that a little bit later and how you build a company to sell it. But I want to be the person they call. And I don't want to ever say, you know what, I don't do that. Or that's not what I don't understand that. I only do X, Y, and Z. If they call me about something, I find it. If they call me and say, I need a certain type of an outfit for my mother to wear because she's having trouble with her buttons, I have it. I'm going to show it to them. I'm not going to take a lot of time because I don't get paid for that, but I am going to be the expert and the person they call. So I really try to educate. When I first came into this business, again, I bought the territories in New York City and in Southwest Florida. And in New York City, I would sit on the subway as I was getting ready to buy this franchise, and I was thinking about it. And I would look at the signs up on the subway and I would think, well, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to advertise in the subway. I'm going to set up a call desk with people who speak a variety of languages, and I'm just going to answer the phone. That's how much I didn't know about what I was about to get into and the fire I was going to go through. I thought that being in a city of 8 million people where, you know, I don't know, 800,000 of them are over the age of 85, the people were just going to be beating my door down. And I would just advertise in the subway. And obviously, that wasn't the right marketing channel.
Well, thanks for clarifying, because if it had been, it might be.
We'd all do it.
we'd all be going to New York right now. That's funny. Well, and for anybody that's a franchise broker, like, Cynthia just gave you the DNA, right? That's the DNA. Anyone who had a snow cone business and monetized it and you know, she had it all laid out. That was perfect. I knew that you're the right person for the job or for the business. So right. I think that's a good sign that you're that shows that you are an early entrepreneur. If I would have seen that early on. So all right. So you said a lot of good things. So like in marketing, it's about that idea of anchoring. When they think of senior care, they think of you, right? Like, first, it's maybe our brand, but, you know, it's really you. Like, you're the brand, right? You're connected to this brand that you represent. So they think of Senior Care Authority, they think of you. So that's important.
The good and the bad. But that's the good and the bad.
Yeah. Okay, that's the good and the bad.
The bad is, if you think about trying to put, and maybe I'm getting ahead of you here, but think about trying to put together an operation that you can exit in a profitable manner. You don't want that operation to be Cynthia Perthews, because how can you exit? Because people will say, well, I need to buy Cynthia. I don't want to buy Senior Care Authority, or I don't want to buy whatever else it is. I want to buy Cynthia. So there's a problem with it's a good and the bad. The good is, in the beginning, it's really good for your branding and your marketing because people begin to call you. The bad is that if you're getting ready to sell, you need to do something that takes your name away from it. In my example, how I try to package what I'm doing in an effort to eventually exit this business, because I am older, I think about the fact that I've removed my cell phone number from my card and from any public piece. I don't have my cell phone number on there any longer because I need them to go through my phone tree that stays with the company when I sell the company. I also don't have my email address in a lot of places, some places, but not in a lot of places. I pass out the info at scanyfl.com because I need it to be able to come in someplace that when I am gone for whatever reason, that business can still run. When I go do presentations, I do a lot of speaking to industry groups, religious organizations, libraries, corporations. And when I do that speaking in person, I have one of my colleagues go with me and I miraculously, quote unquote, forget my card because I want their card to be the one that's left behind. I want the people to call them when the presentation is over. I want them to call that person so that business is growing without me.
Exactly. That's actually very, I didn't think of that angle when I was saying that to you, right? It's true. If you're representing a product, you're in sales, or it's an early business, if you think of it that way, everybody thinks of you as the go-to person in your network. But if you start to think about scaling your business as you're growing, which you've done in two markets, well, multiple markets, but two different states, you have to obviously think about your team and you being extended. It's still you, the principles, the ideas that you embody, you want to make sure the team is similar to you, like taking the call and solving the problem. Say, I don't do that. You don't want a bunch of people answering your phone saying that when you built your business on the other. But you have to then make that transition away, which is really, really important. So that's key. So let's go back a little bit and talk about a few other things along your journey. Like when it comes to technology, and I know you and I have known each other, and so we've talked about different things over the years. Obviously, technology in my mind is if you can figure out how it can help you improve your business, then focus on how that works. Otherwise, it's a lot of noise, right? There's a lot going on with it. And many times can take us down rabbit trails that aren't really helping our business specifically. And so I know you've had to deal with that. You've had to deal with learning that and growing as a business owner and really figuring out what to focus on. So is there something you could share that you would say, these are the key things that I think, if I went back and did it again, these are the priorities around technology?
Look, when I came into this business, as embarrassing as this may sound, I didn't have any idea what those big, shining capital letters, SEO, what it was, what it meant, what to do with it. I knew nothing about that. And so to get myself up to speed, I went to a number of seminars that were put on by the SBA, Small Business Administration. They had these seminars on SEO, on social media, on marketing. That was not what I focused on. When I worked for large corporations who had like a whole floor of people who were doing this. My job was to just go sell stuff. I was the cog in that wheel. But when you come on as a franchisee or any kind of a business owner, you have to wear a lot of different hats. So I had to go learn about SEO and I made some mistakes, but I also know that what I had learned from old media, standard media, when I had a company in 1990, that we never did anything that was just one thing. So we never put all of our money, I know this is going to sound so out of date, we never put all of our money on a billboard on the highway, unless we put our money on a billboard on the highway, radio advertising and print ads, as well as print articles. So we did a lot of articles. So we did four things at that time. And so you had to put a lot of money, if you will, but you had to break it up because you didn't know if it was going to be the billboard that was going to work, the radio is going to work, the article that you wrote. I did things on the morning news. I came on the morning news regularly in one of the businesses that I owned and was the expert on whatever it was that I was selling at that point. But I also did billboards, newspaper, radio. We didn't know. So it, I believe that it's the same thing with technology. So is it a Facebook boost? Is it paid word, owning the words? Is it blogging? Is it podcast? Is it press releases? The answer to that is yes. It's all of them. But you have to really make sure that you're committing to doing a lot of them and not be taken down that rabbit hole of, oh, Facebook, that's the way. Maybe it is, maybe it's not, but you have to do them all.
Yeah, you have to do it step at a time and really now and look at it and say, what is this impacting in my business? What problem did I step out to solve? And how does this improve something or solve a problem? Mm-hmm. And just focus there. And then you learn that. And then you build upon that. Like, it's not like you just all of a sudden do everything. Well, if you had a big team and unlimited, even then, though, that's quite hard. Like, a lot of businesses are built quickly like that. And it doesn't mean just because they have that, they'll succeed. So,
correct.
But right. Great. Well put. I mean, I think that is, it's kind of like marketing used to be like, we don't know what marketing works for us. I forget the saying. There's a famous saying about like, we don't know which half works, you know, but we just spend this much. But I still think that's true, though, especially today, in a sense that you have to be somewhat ubiquitous. But if you can do that in a small area, like if you can learn to be everywhere in a small geographic area, it's probably better to focus that way than just on one silver bullet or what have you.
Right. But at the same time, look, I do some training of professionals around dementia. And I have found that my best online marketing, technology marketing for that service are paid Facebook boost. It is a bang for the buck. And I know where I'm trying to find the people that I want to come to this class because they're on Zoom. I know what they look like. I know I have an avatar for them. I know what they look like. And let me tell you, they're looking at Facebook, and I know they're looking at Facebook. And that's been fairly successful for me for that specific thing that I do. It would not be successful for other things that I do, but for that specific training around dementia, my paid Facebook boosting is been successful, and it's fairly inexpensive. So it's good to just zero in.
Yeah, no, and that's the thing. You have to. That's why I would caution people from this idea that there's these blanket services that just work, right? It's really right. About looking at the guerrilla angles. Like you said, Facebook posts, because you can probably zero in on age, zero in on interest that relates. I mean, who's interested in that unless they're dealing with that, right? So it's very connected.
Right.
So it's a brilliant idea to use that mechanism to reach that audience. And that's how you have to be thinking about it.
Well, right? I also will tell you that you have to know where you are. So I still use old-fashioned print. There's two different avenues that I go through, old-fashioned print. And one of them is a magazine. It's in like, they hand out 60,000 of them in doctor's offices. And it is an old, it's a magazine. And they print it every month. And they have articles in it. And when I was first in it, someone that I knew socially came to me and she said, oh my gosh, I saw you in this magazine. And I saw you in this magazine. And I said, where? She said, I was in my doctor's office. And I said, well, you must have been there in the waiting room for over an hour because I was on page 56. Okay. So you had to have read a lot. And she said, oh no, I take these home. Every time I go to a doctor's office, I take this magazine home and I read it cover to cover. And I found that, again, old fashioned, but many people will call me and say, oh, I saw you in the, they don't remember the name, but I saw you in this magazine in my doctor's office. And I know exactly which magazine it is, but that magazine, that's in Florida. And when I look in New York, there aren't any magazines sitting on doctor's offices. There's not anything that really works the same way as this print does in Florida. And then there's another item that I do that's print. They claim they have an online marketing presence, but it's really the print. It's like a Yellow Pages for people in this industry. Again, I wouldn't do it anywhere else but here, because there are other things I get with that. I get the benefit of knowing the person who runs that system, and she has the keys to the kingdom. She also gets me set up for speaking engagements. A number of things that just the print ad that I'm paying for gets me so much more. Again, not in every market does that work. So you have to really be paying attention.
And you're saying things like, you know, you're getting more value. You're like maximizing every relationship from multiple perspectives. I think that's the other thing sometimes that people don't do enough of is, what else can I get from this relationship? What other ways can I leverage one relationship? And so, yeah, and I know in digital, we talk a lot about taking content and doing that, right? Slicing it up and sharing it in different places. But like the way you just talked about some of these other relationships, it is like that. You're thinking strategically, not just transactionally about like, what can this do for my business? All the different ways.
Correct. This little yellow pages thing that you know, originally when I started in this business and I'm like, I'm going to pay for this. And I got calls from that little yellow pages item because it sits at the CVS's and the Walgreens. It sits in those places. But I will tell you that every single call that I got from that printed piece came from someone who was hanging out at the CVS and the Walgreens a lot because they didn't have any place else to go, if that gives you an idea of the type of what I was getting on that phone call. So it wasn't like I got business from that little book. I got business from that relationship.
Yeah, interesting. And it's interesting the way you're thinking about the people, right? And their actions and their behaviors and the way they think. The way we engage with a magazine in an office, a doctor's office, in Florida is different than we might at a CVS in New York look at a Yellow Pages. And you have to think that through, you know. But anyway, that's brilliant, though, because if you do, then you can kind of figure it out. And then for you, you're like, there's also these other angles. So even if this doesn't work, this works. So either way, it's a good relationship. Like, and that's what I try to do with every relationship is, if even if there's something that fails, there's something that still benefits. So, you know, net, worst case scenarios are not so bad. It's like refusing to fail.
I think you have to think about the word relationship is really important to me because when I first came into this business, I also started in essence with a database that was, there was nothing in it. Okay. There were some names in it, but the value of them wasn't that great at that time. Okay. So I needed to build that database. So in my first year, because I know you're probably going to ask me what mistakes did I make in this business. In my first year, my goal was to build my network. Now, I did that very successfully and put a plan in place. In the beginning, I would sit on the weekends and enter in cards and scrape websites to try to find people's contact information. But what I didn't do during that first year was I developed the network, but I didn't develop the relationship. And so at the end of the day, it doesn't really take this thousands of people in your network. It takes those few relationships. And by a relationship, that's somebody that you know the names of their kids, their dog, where they went to school, where they vacation, where they live, what's important to them, when their birthday is. That's where you get good business from a B2B relationship, is knowing who that person is, as opposed to knowing the 35 people who all do elder law practice in this county. That's not as valuable as knowing a couple of elder law attorneys and their whole life story.
Yeah, there was an acronym I learned recently. I think it's pretty interesting. It's called RICE, like the word, the food.
Yeah.
So it's how most of us are motivated, how we can influence each other. So R stands for reward, which is pretty obvious, right? I stands for ideology. C stands for coercion. And E stands for ego.
Okay.
And obviously the coercion, we'll just throw this out. Anyone who's marketing and doing the right thing wouldn't use those tactics. But, you know, we know we respond to pressure. So we'll throw that out. And that's really the least effective I learned. Most effective was ideology. Mm-hmm. And ego was second. Reward third. Mm-hmm. But ideology, you really can't know that or anything about someone's ego, even if you don't know them. Right. And that's where that's huge, because if you can connect with someone at that level, there's something else there that they say, I'm just Cynthia. I'm sending her all my deals as long as they all work out. Unless you really mess things up, if you can connect with someone, it doesn't matter if there's nine other skilled people that he's not. It's making that connect, I feel. And I know through sales.
I've been around a while, and in old school sales, we were trained that when we went into someone's office, you needed to scan that office and find something in that office that you had in common. And it might be as simple as, oh, those are your kids skiing. I skied once 30 years ago. I mean, you know, you had to stretch sometime to get that connection. And now in this world, we don't sit in a lot of people's offices. We're Zooming or we're on the phone or we run into them at a happy hour or we're doing things. It doesn't matter. You still have to figure out something. When I talk to my referral partners or when I talk to my clients, I am listening to, wait, where did they go to school? Oh my gosh, my sister's friend's mother went to that school. I mean, I'm stretching to find something that can be that around their ideology of that is a stretch that I can get us 2, 3, 4 degree of separation with them to be close with them.
Yeah. No, really. So, and I think I was going to ask you your thoughts, you know, and I definitely want to get your take on the future because there's craziness going on in our world today. And part of that is technology. Part of that is the industry you're in, the growth of the aging population. Mm-hmm. But I definitely want your take on the future. But I wanted to, before we get into that, I wanted to just zero in again on this idea of relationships. So I know in a lot of business models, building a network around you is key, right? It's how you're going to get your referrals, but it's also how you can become that go-to person we talked about earlier, the authority. Like you can answer questions that go beyond maybe your domain because you know a little bit, because you've partnered with some lawyers and some doctors, and I think they become an extension of you. And it's not that, you know, at some point you hand it off, but it's like you become that quarterback. And so it's so key. How have you looked at that part? Because I know that's an area that you kind of said, well, I could get those connections initially, didn't really have the relationships. So we just talked about how you can really make that connection with someone. But it's also about reasons to interact with them, right? It's about what else can you do to provide value for them and their audience, right? So how have you dealt with that? What are some good ideas that you've had to help partners and yeah, honestly work together and joint venture with partners? Like what has worked well in that realm?
Sure. What has worked well for me as well as for my team is speaking. So I'm trying to get every opportunity I can get to get in front of someone, whether it's a referral partner or whether it is an end user client. So someone whose parents are needed to move or someone who's a solo ager who's aging and needs some help. I always want to find a way to get in front of them, right face to face with them. And so not only is that what I want, that's what financial planners want. That's what elder law attorneys want. That's what real estate agent wants. Real estate agents want. They don't want to, none of those people, and myself included, want to be making cold calls to a list of people who just turned 85. We don't want to do that. We want to be someplace where they are, where we can form a relationship with them pretty quickly. And so what we do is we offer up a lot. We lead with, let me tell you some presentations that we can do where we can help you have something to talk about with your clients. So yeah, you can get on the phone with your, if you're a financial planner and you can say, I'm going to talk with them every quarter and tell them what I think the market's going to do. And I can talk to them about what I heard the Fed was going to do. And you can talk about them. And look, I get those quarterly phone calls with my financial planner, whatever. Okay. But if you can say, hey, why don't you come to my office? Or I've also put on a webinar and we're going to talk a little bit about the market, but we're also going to talk about how do you figure out how much these things cost when you age? Or what's the difference between dementia and just being pleasantly confused in old age? Or how do I keep my brain as healthy as I can keep it so I can spend my money? We always can tie it in with a financial planner or an elder law attorney or any of those types of people, but we are bringing them a gift that we can help them get in front of their clients. And by the way, I can get in front of their clients too. Okay. So yeah. It's a win-win for us because all the financial planner wants to talk about is what's going on with the market. What's the difference between a stock and a bond? What should we do with your money? Should we put it in preferreds versus, you know, corporates? That's what they know. And I know something else. And when we come together, it's a really strong piece. It's been very successful for us in our partnerships with the B2B, with the relationships there. And it's built our database of people. If I can get 10, 25 people in a room, it works. Because that's 25 people I didn't know before. And they came to this seminar, this webinar, because they had a question. And if they have a question, because they're thinking about it. And if they're thinking about it, they need to know me.
Yeah, exactly. I love it.
It's old school. It's not technology. You know, Zoom is the only technology piece of it. It's kind of an old school thing of going in and doing these seminars. And people just are very attracted to that. We lead with that. We have some really great marketing materials around that. And we get called all the time to do presentations. I probably do 2 to 3 every single week somewhere in this country.
Well, you know, that's interesting. So, if I were in the business, if I were getting started in this business, I would say that is key. So go out, build those relationships, focus on them, build value with them. And honestly, years later, it would work. Like I could just see if you just focus there, just there.
Well, you know, Senior Care Authority has a program called Beyond Driving with Dignity. And I'm not going to talk about what I think about that program. It's a great program. I'm glad we have it. But I met someone. Look, we have a franchisee in New Jersey, and he came in, I think, kind of during COVID and needed to get his feet wet and get up running pretty quickly. And he did massive amounts of presentations around driving in the elderly or driving with dementia. Now, one day in this past year, I met a woman in New York City in Manhattan, and she said, "Oh my gosh." And she said, "Are there any of you in New Jersey?" And I said, "Yes." And I told her the name of this person. She goes, "Oh, he's the driving guy." You know what? Great. I don't know if she knew what he did or not. I'm sure she did, but she knew him as the driving guy. That's okay, because that got him in front of so many people doing these presentations that they knew Senior Care Authority and they knew him.
I was going to ask you, I know the driving is a big topic. Is there a favorite you have that you think if almost every partner would love to do one of these? Is there one topic?
There's two topics. There's two that I get requests for all the time. One of them is what I've termed, what other people have termed, solo aging. I think that kind of the trite phrase is an elder orphan, but I find that, not a great phrase. So it's solo aging, and that's for people who are never partnered, maybe never had children. Maybe they partnered and had children and all those people are gone, dead, or maybe they just don't speak to them. And in the world that we live in, that is the largest growing piece segment of the population of people who are turning over 65. Because, you know, I can say this because I'm female, but due to Women's Lib, women stopped marrying. And they stopped having children because they didn't have to get married with Women's Lib. And so they didn't marry. And then men didn't marry. And women waited to have children. And all these things that caused them to be a solo ager. People love that presentation. Love it. And then the other one that we do that we get requests for all the time is, how do you know the difference between dementia and Alzheimer's? And how can you keep from having it? And we do something around a presentation around how to keep your brain healthy and things that you should eat or things that you should do. We also do a presentation around, as I like to say, if you go out into the parking lot and you can't find your car, that's not necessarily dementia. But if you go into the parking lot, that same parking lot, and you're looking for a boat, that is dementia. And so what we do is we do a presentation around that, and the people who are there feel this sense of relief that maybe they don't have dementia. And sometimes they don't, because they just get stressed at a certain age about forgetting someone's name or putting their keys in the refrigerator. And there's some of that is just stress and getting older. So those are presentations that everybody all the time want to hear.
I could just say that you could see me right now. I put my glasses on my head. I've lost my glasses with my glasses on my head.
You're just getting seasoned.
but that's really awesome. I mean, that, you know, like it's all back to simplifying things, right? Yes, I'm a tech guy. I'm fascinated by technology. I've always been interested. It's why I learned about it. Like you, I self-taught, you know, most things, because it wasn't really anywhere you could just learn it. You had to just go do it. But now I'm almost going in reverse.
Rob, anything that you do along this line or anything that I do or anyone does, the key to it is not just the simplicity, but using it in a number of different areas. So again, we may do a presentation and we try to record them when we can, And then we want to put it on our YouTube channel. We want to put a transcript of it in our newsletter. We want to put it on social media. We want to do a number of things with this simple little presentation that can cause, and before and after that presentation, we're advertising it before and we're advertising it after. And it's a way that we get people's names. We do a presentation and we'll say, if you'd like to have this PowerPoint, well, I'll send it to you if you'll sign up here with your email address. I don't care if somebody that's in the audience has my PowerPoint. What are they going to do with it? 9 times out of 10, they probably don't even look at it. Okay. But it's a way for us to get data that doesn't cost us anything.
Yes. I think the whole joint venture concept and this idea of partnering and sharing audiences and again, I think to your comment about PowerPoints and things, I mean, look, we were in the information world. Now we're in the intelligence world. So FYI to anybody that creates information, you're not going to be needed much longer. There's a lot of, so it's interesting, right? It was in demand where you would guard your presentation, your content. Now I'd say you better just let it go and build that audience because that's the best way to do it. But anyway, thank you for that. Thank you for adding those angles because really it isn't that hard once you have the content to think about what else can I use it for? Mm-hmm. So very cool. And I think it's very cool back to the relationships. I really feel like business and marketing we're gonna have more time to think about these relationships. The minutiae of the last 25 years of all this technological expansion has been insane. Mm-hmm. And it's like you get away from the basics, like you said, but getting to know people. Right. Oh, you went to Penn State. I went to Penn State. So I think of that. But it's like just knowing that little thing about me. It's been on my LinkedIn profile since 2005, whenever that was, right?
Right. So, I visited Penn State one time. See, we have something in common.
Yeah. And I would think that's really cool, especially if you said I went to this place, like a restaurant I knew, right?
Right.
I fell out drinking or something. Right. But, I mean, the reality is that's important. And I think we've lost a lot of that because of the overwhelm of information and our ability to focus. But it's important as business owners for us to circle back and remember that. So relationships.
Well, especially in the senior industry. So there's technology, but I'm dealing with adult children. Okay. That's mainly who my client base is. I very rarely have someone who's 85 who calls me and says, I would love to go to an assisted living. Can you help me do that? It's their children who call me. So I'm dealing with that group. However, at the end of the day, I am dealing with the 85-year-old and I'm trying to help the 85-year-old feel comfortable about making a move. And I'm helping the 85-year-old figure out how to get that person there. And none of that is technology. That's something that is personal, interpersonal skills that you have for that client at the end of the day.
Well, that tees up my question. So I wanted to talk about the future a little bit. I think you answered some of it in that because that's how I feel that relationships, communication, those types of skills, creativity, human skills, right? Intuition. These are going to be more in demand, not these clicking on things and learning a billion different softwares and that all be done for us. So thinking about relationships, thinking about where the industry is going, even just taking the technology out of it, Cynthia, just thinking of your view of the growth, right? I know we talked about the silver tsunami for like 20 years. But
right,
I really feel like now they're really old. They're actually here. The waves are starting to break, right, on the beach. Tell me what you think. What do you think? What are some of your predictions, thoughts of the future?
I wish I had a crystal ball, but because I am the future, so I'm in my mid-60s. So I'm about to cross that line with 9,999 of my friends one day in February. So it's a little ways away, but where there's 10,000 people a day that turn 65. And that I'm crossing that line at that time. And I know that what I see is that this age group, my age group, and maybe the age group a little bit, on the older side from me, we are control freaks. We want to make sure that we look good and we want to do things to control that. We want to make sure that our food is clean and organic and things that we can control that. And we want to control how we go out of this life. And I tell my audiences when I speak to them that I'm sure that most of them, I asked them to raise their hand if you think you're going to die in your sleep and bounce your last check. And let me tell you, they all raise their hand. Okay. That's what they think. That's what they want. So we're more controlling. And I think that this industry, the senior living industry, the senior industry needs to make sure that those of us have some control power in it. Some ability to control what is happening to them. I am also an end of life choices advocate, trained in that space. And that is whatever your religious beliefs may be, it is something that allows people to make some decisions about how they might die if they have a chronic terminal disease. And I think that's something that people in this industry are asking for, or people in this age group are asking for. I think that people in this age group are asking for ways to remain as I don't like the word independent, but I can't think of another one right now to work for it. But they want to be independent. They want to have their own autonomy. They want to be autonomous adults who are making their decisions. We do work around helping people do research about what they might do. I have clients who will call me and say, I've had this diagnosis. I've probably got another 20 years before it's going to affect me, but I want to look now and figure out what my future might look like. We charge them a fee. We'll go do that work all day for them, but we charge them a fee for that. And then we explain to them, put that in a folder and put it away so that you know where it is. I like to tell my clients that I don't want to worry about how am I going to sell my condo and what am I going to do with the pictures that are in my closet that really belong to my children? And what will I do? Will I sell my car? Will I get to keep my car? Let's not worry about those details. Some of them will worry about how do I get my mail? And my housekeeper comes every other Friday. What do I tell her? Okay. So they worry about those things. And I try to help them get to what I call the where, the when, and the how. And let's just figure out where you would go if you get hit by a bus, if you have a stroke, if you don't recover as well as you think you're going to recover from a hip replacement. Where would you go? And have that idea and put it in a folder. And so we do some of that where with people, and we charge a fee for that. So it's a way for us to keep our business going as people are earlier and earlier beginning to investigate, what's my life going to look like, especially after they've placed their parents somewhere? They see their own mortality and they get kind of freaked out. And they say, wait a minute, you know, I don't like the way I did this with my parents, and I want to know how I keep from having that done. Or their children don't live anywhere close to them. They may live on the other side of the world, much less, you know, the other side of the country. They have to figure out how to do it by themselves. And so we want our clients to get educated and figure out the where. I think that memory care is a big, big concern. More and more people, because we're living longer, are having cognitive decline and maybe formalized diagnosis of dementia. And it's not, it can be an unpleasant disease, and it can be a long-lived disease. And so people are frightened by that. They're seeing their parents, one or both sometimes, of them go through it. So I think we need to think through, what does that look like for people who have dementia if we don't get a cure for that terrible disease? You know, there's 8 million people in the United States that have it, and that's a lot. So that's where I see, I people say this, I don't like that phrase, I want to age in place, I want to die at home. And I'm saying, you know what, I love my home, but I don't want to die in my home because there's not enough amenities here for me to die in my home. I want to be someplace when that time comes where people are really kind of like waiting on me hand and foot. Okay. I want them to be doing things for me, and I want to be in a place where I'm comfortable. And I don't know that I would be comfortable in my, you know, sort of sleeper bed when it came that time. So I like to help people understand, what does that really look like? And we need to think about it for ourselves too. What does it look like to where you age? So I just think there's a lot of things that are going to change, but I don't have the answer about what they are.
Yeah, but that's an important point. Like, we are the future, like, are, you know, us seasoned middle-agers, if you will.
Yeah.
You know, it's, yeah, we are the future. So it's some of the decisions we're making now. I do what I study in the technology world. If any of the good things are true, then those types of things should go away. I can't imagine they wouldn't.
Correct.
That's a whole nother thing that we don't even, it's just not even factored in. It's like a discovery that hasn't happened yet.
Well, and I'm always looking for people who are strategically thinking about it and talking about it. And I can't say that I'm finding a lot of groups or are people who think about it. They're especially in these large national chains of assisted livings. I think they're just trying to keep their feet under them and keep things going based on getting a little knocked down during COVID, and they're still recovering. And so I haven't ever found any groups of strategic thinkers about what this is going to look like.
Well, more and more, right? We'll be talking. To be continued for sure. So before we wrap things up, I wanted to give you an opportunity if you had any final parting advice for anyone that may be thinking about getting into the business, doing kind of what you're doing, because I do know more. We need help. I'm sure, the industry needs help. Mm-hmm. Any advice there? And then what's the best way and maybe if they're in your market, because I know you're in Florida and New York, I know Senior Care Authority is nationwide or most of the nation. What was the best way to reach out? And maybe some advice about that.
Sure. So one of the things that I tell people who come to me about franchising, and they say, if you had it to do over again, would you do it again? And I say, yes, I would. When I made the decision to go with a franchise as opposed to starting this myself, could I have started myself? Probably. But at the end of the day, it's going to cost me the same amount of money probably and the same amount of time, maybe less time. Okay. Because I didn't have any branding. I didn't have any idea what the business really was. I didn't have any connections. I didn't have anybody that was in a network that I could call and ask them questions. Now, I'm 6 years into it. I have a massive group of people that I can call and ask questions to that are not in the senior care franchise. I can call my neighbor. I can call somebody that I see at dinner. I can call people and ask them those questions. But I had to meet them, and it took Senior Care Authority and a franchise model for me to be able to meet them. So would I do it again? Yes. The thing that I did was I used a broker, and I believe in brokers because, again, I didn't know what I didn't know. And my broker that I used that still sends me a gift around the holidays, because he sold me 4 territories and I kept sending people in his direction, right? But he educated me on the business. He educated me on franchises. He showed me an insurance franchise to sell insurance. He showed me a women's health and fitness thing. He showed me a dog walking group. He showed me things all over the map. Even though I went to him and said, this is what I wanted to do, something in this industry. He showed me a lot of stuff, but seeing a lot of stuff, I think he even showed me like a Chick-fil-A. Seeing that stuff allowed me to formulate really what I wanted. And so I believe in the broker system in this area. So it's nothing is easy. And most franchises are not like a McDonald's where you go in and they give you a book and you open the door and you start selling hamburgers. It just doesn't work. But in these kind of franchises, if you find the right one, they'll give you enough rope to hang yourself. So you get to do what you want to do. You get to grow it and build it. And really, as long as you're staying a little bit inside the lines, you get to get out of the lines a little bit. So that's what I love about the franchise piece. And for anybody who wants to get in touch with me, then you can, my first name is Cynthia. It's Cynthia. And you can just reach me at Cynthia@scanyfl.com. And so that's SCA, it stands for Senior Care Authority, NY, because I'm in New York, FL, because I'm in Florida. So SCANYFL.com.
Well, for anyone listening, she just gave you, and she doesn't normally do that. So good. I was gonna say, what team member can they reach out to? But that's okay. I'm glad you did that. And I always say, because a lot of our guests do that, I always say, take advantage of that, because these are some smart people that give you some of their time, right?
Yeah.
You always learn something new. And whether it's about starting a business or it's about solving a problem with your parents or your own situation, I know Cynthia and her team pretty well. So I highly recommend you reach out.
Well, and don't get me wrong. I want to make sure, full disclaimer, if you're calling me about my business and you want to learn about my business, trust me, I'm going to learn about your business too. So don't think it's a one-way street, because I learn from other people as well. So just beware.
Sounds good. Well, I appreciate your time today. Thanks again for everybody that's tuning in, and bye for now.